Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Mayoko.
This week on the 49ers Insider Podcast presented by SoFi, a modern finance company, it's the 100th episode of the 49ers Insider Podcast, and here to celebrate it with me is Laura Britt.
Thanks.
Laura?
I got to give you a golf clap for that, so I'm going to put the mic down here.
Well, I think a golf clap is soundless.
No, golf clap's like very soft. Okay. My first one was, I might have gotten kicked out. It's a little loud, but no. I got it under control.
Okay, that's very nice. Well,
congratulations.
Thank you. So we've had 99 episodes. This is the 100th episode. And so I thought this would be kind of fun on the 100th episode to kind of look back at some of the highlights. I don't know if there have been very many lowlights, but...
So many lowlights.
But, you know, we talked to all kinds of former and current players, coaches, executives, media members, and even a comedian.
Wow. Yeah, you've done it all. And I just come in at the tail end. I get to celebrate the 100th podcast episode. You know, I was thinking, you always have to, you know, introduce yourself, which is kind of weird. But for this special occasion, we should have someone else introduce you.
Oh, I think I know who you might be talking about.
You might
about.
Remember
I think
this.
You might be referring to episode 5.
That's exactly what I'm referring to.
Here we are, week 4, Matt Mayoko Podcast!
With Joe Staley.
So Joe Staley, I got to tell you, he introduced you way better than I ever could have. So I'm glad that he was able to do that.
And he even threw in the, with Joe Staley. That's pretty good.
He introduces himself too.
Yeah.
So he does the double intro.
And we'll be hearing more from Joe Staley later.
I'm shocked.
Have you ever heard him sing?
No.
Well, you will before this show is over. On just the second episode of the 49ers Insider Podcast, my guest was Eric Reid. Now, this was mid-September 2016, and Reid and Colin Kaepernick had just started their protest of racial inequality by kneeling during the playing of the national anthem.
Growing up in Baton Rouge and seeing what I've seen and seeing and hearing what my family has experienced with these issues that we have in the country, I feel a sincere responsibility to try and make those issues better for my daughters and for my future kids, if I'm blessed to have any more. So a lot of time and energy has been spent on the method of protest, and I think it's time that the conversation changes to how we proceed with making these issues better.
Reid talked about hearing what Colin Kaepernick had to say during a team meeting and why he felt the way he did.
Can imagine a lot of people were wondering what was going on when all that happened, and he spoke, and you can hear it in his voice that it was thought out. It wasn't just, you know, he believes in what he's doing, and so that's when I approached him and said, "Hey, look, I support and believe in what you're talking about, because it is true. There are these issues, and I want to know if there's a way that I can support you moving forward, because you're not alone in this."
2 years later, this is still a huge issue, and it's still, you know, now
headlines still today.
Colin Kaepernick hasn't been signed by anybody. Eric Reid was just signed a couple weeks ago by the Carolina Panthers, and I would have never have known, would have never thought at that point, more than 2 years ago, that this would still be something that would be talked about on a national level.
That's crazy, though. You said you spoke with him 2 weeks after they started doing
it? Might have been a week after.
A week after
they started.
Yeah, it
might have been just a few days after that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's for you to see all of that play out too, especially being so close to those two and first kind of having that firsthand experience is probably really wild, and just what it became and still what it is today.
Yeah. So we're going to take a look back at some of the history of the San Francisco 49ers, and I think there's no better way to start than by going back to episode 12 when my guest was former owner Eddie DeBartolo. When Mr. D took over, he went through some rough times. Kind of reminds me of what's going on currently.
Shh. We're not going to think about that.
The 49ers had back-to-back 2-14 seasons, including Bill Walsh's first year with the 49ers in 1979. The fans were irate, and nobody could have guessed just 2 years later the 49ers would be Super Bowl champions.
And you say to yourself, and you say to your wife, you know, is this all worth it? You know, it's just one loss after another. But you know what? It got into my system, and I made up my mind that that this was going to be something that I was going to make into something that would be proud for myself, for my family, for the fans, you know. And then, you know, obviously Bill was hired, and we had a tough year or two with Bill. But then, you know, we started to move in the right direction after a few years, you know, with the drafts, with Joe and with Ronnie. And I mean, I could go on and on. Unbelievable. I have goosebumps. I mean, you know, I see these guys a lot. I mean, we're like one family. I hate to keep bringing that up, but I don't know about other teams. But truly, truly, hundreds of these guys and I get together, or we try to get together at times. And I think that's really, really the reason why I am in the Hall of Fame. And I think it's the reason why Coach Walsh is in the Hall of Fame, the great coach that he was. I mean, we just had this relationship and rapport with these players, and I still have it. I mean, they're like brothers to me.
Well, there's the Hall of Famer, Eddie DeBartolo.
Reminiscing.
Showing that determination. And that determination was shown at the end of, or in the early 90s, when the 49ers had lost to the Dallas Cowboys a couple of times, including in a playoff game in 1993. And the 49ers would go on to win the Super Bowl the next year. But here's Carmen Policy talking about an elevator ride after losing to the Cowboys in the playoffs.
It was after the second game, the 1993 season, when Eddie and I were getting on the elevator at Dallas Stadium and going down into the locker room. And he wasn't out of line. He wasn't emotional. He was intent. And he looked at me and he said, "We cannot allow this to happen again. We won't allow it to happen again." That's it. Didn't yell, didn't scream. But he could have set off fireworks prior to and after, and it wouldn't have had more of an effect on me. And that's when we made up our minds, we're going to find the missing pieces, and we're going to get it done in 1994.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
That's some foreshadowing right there.
Determination. Yeah, no, Eddie DeBartolo did not take losing easy. Neither did Carmen Policy. That was just kind of the mindset of the 49ers. And, you know, we're going to talk more about the biggest play in 49ers franchise history, because there's a lot of really notable people surrounding that. So anyway, Eddie DeBartolo, obviously a Hall of Famer. And there's a new Hall of Famer as of this year. Terrell Owens.
T.O.
Terrell Owens, T.O. What do you prefer, Terrell Owens or T.O.?
T.O. I like T.O.
Yeah? Well, let's listen to what Terrell Owens has to say. Is there a difference between T.O. and Terrell Owens?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a correlation to superheroes. You think they have these alter egos, I guess, so to speak. When you think of the Incredible Hulk, you have the Incredible Hulk, but outside of that, he's David Banner. Spider-Man, you have Peter Parker, you know. Superman, you have Clark Kent. That's how I felt like I was, you know, in a sense. And I think in a real world, it doesn't work that way. These are fictional characters. These are cartoon characters. But for me, I really feel that that's who I was. When I stepped on the field, it's almost like when I put on that football uniform, I'm someone else. I'm not Terrell. I become T.O. I become an action hero.
Classic T.O.
Yeah, an action hero. You know, it's funny, when I was covering him, there was one time that he came into the locker room. It wasn't Halloween or anything. He came into the locker room dressed as Spider-Man.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Like the tights and everything. And it was just like, it wasn't like to...
It was like a Tuesday.
It was like, yeah, there he is.
Or Wednesday.
Yeah, it's like, oh, there's T.O. He's dressed as Spider-Man.
Yeah, no one's worried about it at all.
The 49ers could have had a Superman in the 2004 draft. They were choosing between a couple of quarterbacks. The one they took was Alex Smith. The one they could have taken was Aaron Rodgers.
Guy that we all know.
Yes. And this is what Mike Nolan, who was then the coach and the decision maker, had to say about that.
Though I thought the way Aaron Rodgers carried himself was much more like an NFL prototypical, successful, you know, great quarterback. I mean, all those guys, whether it's a Dan Marino or John Elway and all these guys, you know, they've got tremendous confidence about themselves. And so they, you know, they come off in a way that's arrogant to some degree, but that's what you want. You want a winner. You want somebody that's like that. And at the time, we made the safe choice on a player that Alex was a very good player. Like I said, Alex is a good player to this day. So it wasn't like we didn't do that, but we could have made a better choice. We just had kind of gotten together a little better on our decision process at the time.
Alex Smith has turned into a really good player.
Yeah,
he's been a
solid
player.
Hindsight's always 20/20.
Yeah.
It's not like guys go out and try and pick somebody that's not going to be the next best thing. You have to make your best decision with what you have at the time.
Yeah, and so it's funny that Mike Nolan should use that term, winners. You want a winner. There was somebody else who wanted winners. That was Mike Singletary. And in 2008, in Mike Singletary's first game after taking over for Mike Nolan, he ordered Vernon Davis off the field and went into that famous rant. I caught up last year with Vernon Davis, and, well, here's Vernon Davis's impersonation of Mike Singletary.
It never leaves. It's always there. It's always there. It's always around, and, you know, it permeates throughout the years. I mean, it's just there. And, you know, I first heard it after that game. I went home and sat on the couch and I turned the TV on it. And there he was, Coach Singletary. I'd rather play with 10 guys than to play with someone to talk about himself. I will win. Can't do it. I told Vernon, he better off going in and taking a shower.
You got it down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know it like the back of my hand.
That's a really good impersonation.
That's pretty good, yeah.
I'm sure he never forgot that moment,
no,
obviously.
Absolutely not. And he says it helped turn him around from a guy who was selfish to a guy who kind of began to look at himself in a different way and realize what it took to be a winner. One guy who was always a winner, Frank Gore. And the guy who drafted Frank Gore, Scott McLuhan, shared a story about Frank, and those two were pretty tight. And here's Scott McLuhan talking about the decision to draft Frank Gore with the first pick of the third round, which at that time, there were some people who thought the 49ers reached.
At the combine, I met with him on the offside, because at first he didn't pass our physical, so he was off the board. But I wanted to talk to him face to face, so I talked to him at the combine on the side, and then so he calls me and he says, you know, I barely understand. He's going so fast. He's nervous. You know how he talks.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, going through this, you know, one team said they're going to take me in the first, and two other teams said they're taking me in the second. And I said, I'll be honest with you, Frank, and I'm always honest with all the players and coaches. I said, if you're there, we have the first pick in the third round. I'm going to take you. I can't take you prior to that because of the medical issues. And he's like, well, I'm not going to last that long. I said, well, I don't know. If you do, I'll take you. So, of course, he lasted the first pick of the third round. I took him, and since that day, we've been best friends. He says, I respect you and I trust you. And you get Frank's trust. A lot of players, you get their trust, you got them. You got them, and they'll do anything for you, and I'll do anything for them.
Wow, how cool is that?
And Frank Gore is another one, still going strong, like just climbing up the charts for all-time leading rushers. And, you know, just seeing him when he came in as a young guy, the knock on his knees, could he hold up to the rigors of the NFL? So I get a lot of joy from watching Frank Gore play football, and I got a lot of joy from covering him for all those years with the 49ers.
Yeah, you love to see guys be successful as they continue on this NFL journey, because a lot of times – guys don't get to stay in as long as people like him have.
Yeah, and very nice segue, Laura, because here's a guy who was at the top of his game from the moment he entered the NFL, and then he retired on his own terms, Patrick Willis. 7 Pro Bowls in his first 7 years. And, man, he's still young enough to play football. So,
he doesn't want to.
Yeah, well, let's see what he has to say.
Many people always tell me that, you know, I meet all the time, and they say, man, you retired too early. You still have so much left in the tank. And, you know, I usually ask them, I say, well, if I retired too early, then what is too late? You know, and for me, you know, I felt like it was the perfect timing. My body, the stars aligned for me. And, again, I never set out to play this game for anyone else's expectation of what they think I should do and how I should do it. It was something that, you know, I believed in myself before anyone else saw it. So, you know, I'd never put that in anyone else's hands. So for me, it was the right time.
That was a tumultuous offseason for the 49ers because they had Patrick Willis retired, Justin Smith, Anthony Davis decided he wasn't going to play anymore. And that offseason started with the 49ers and Jim Harbaugh, quote unquote, having a mutual parting. Then the 49ers appeared to be ready to hire Adam Gase, and they ended up hiring Jim Tomsula. And there was a lot of talk at the time about Adam Gase. You know, was he offered the job? Who made that decision to hire Jim Tomsula instead of Adam Gase? Well, I talked to Adam Gase, and I asked him about what transpired.
I really felt that we had a great meeting and felt that that I was in a good position, and, you know, just it went the other way.
So in your eyes, it was the general manager making the call on the head coach.
Well, I knew that Trent was the final decision maker in San Francisco heading into the interview process. And, you know, when we first met, when it was all 4 of us in there, that was explained to me right from the get-go that Trent ran the organization as far as who was getting hired for the head coaching job. And, you know, I knew that going in.
So that was Adam Gase talking about Trent Baalke. Adam Gase, of course, now the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Do we need a little levity thrown into the mix here?
Yes.
Well, I had a comedian on, Al Madrigal.
Perfect.
San Francisco native, big 49ers fan. And this was several years ago. I think this was like 2012, 2013. He was asked to do a stand-up routine at Trent Baalke's birthday party.
No pressure.
And this was a guy who was like looking out into the audience and seeing like all these familiar faces.
Oh, yeah, people I'm they sure. Know.
So he last year on the 49ers Insider podcast, he delivered some of his material.
Everybody in the organization, front office, is at this place. Every scout is there. Tomsula brought me up, you know, well before he's coach. And I said, keep it going for Ron Jeremy, everybody. And he turned around and flipped me off, which was awesome. And I go, before we start, I get a couple of announcements. Jim Harbaugh cannot be here this evening, folks, because he's on a Disney cruise, which is true. And where I have it on good authority that he's already made Goofy cry twice, and he just tried to sign Peter Pan to the practice squad as a 4-string quarterback, which is ridiculous because we already have Colt McCoy, and we don't need another Peter Pan. And then I said, A.J. Jenkins cannot be here tonight. And everybody goes, ooh. I go, he wanted to come, but he was bumped by an old lady in the airport and thrown off his route. So then I proceeded to tear everybody a new one. Yeah, it was great. I had jokes for Jed, who was there and took it in stride. And I said, Jed went to Notre Dame on my mom owns a football team scholarship. I said, congratulations on being the most successful guy named Jed. My second place is a meth dealer in Fresno.
That's what you have to do, yeah, though. If you're going to do the stand-up comedy route, you just got to go hard.
You got to take everybody down.
That's good. That's really good.
Just as a side note, I met Al Madrigal week one of the regular season. He was at the game in Minnesota, and just out of the blue, I get a text from Al Madrigal. Hey, what are you doing? Do you want to go out to dinner? So I had dinner with Al and a couple of his buddies and had a great time.
That's amazing.
So, you want to pay off your student loan debt or credit card debt and invest and save? Sounds like you're ambitious. SoFi can help you work toward accomplishing it all. Refinance student loans, invest, and get personal loans for home renovation projects or to consolidate credit card debt. This is why I, SoFi. Get started at SoFi.com. SoFi.com. Terms and conditions and state restrictions apply. CFL 6054612. Advisory services offered through SoFi Wealth, LLC. Well, the 49ers, after that material that Al Madrigal gave, they went in a different direction. And at the Super Bowl in Houston, 49ers said they couldn't officially hire a head coach, but it was clear who they were going to hire. And I ended up spending 3 days right next to Kyle Shanahan. And there, I think the very first question I asked him was, why John Lynch?
Oh, I thought the first question you asked him would be, are you going to come on the 49ers Insider podcast?
You know what? I didn't have to ask him because he was on it.
He was on it.
I wasn't telling him he was on it, but he was on it.
John, I think, has been interested in for a while. Just talking to him. John's a guy I've developed a relationship with over the years. And, you know, he's a guy who lives and dies football. Very smart guy who really is, I think, wanted to get back into it where he could compete on Sunday. And, you know, there's actually a winner or loser at the end of the game. So I truly believe that whenever you have a smart guy who's very talented and has got extremely high character and has no problem working extremely hard, I feel when you have a person like that who has all those qualities and you give him the time, it's a matter of time before that guy's going to figure it out. And John, as anybody who's met him, as impressive a human being as there is, he's succeeded in everything he's done. And, you know, and just reading and seeing everything, I get it's new to him, but if I'm going to bet on someone, I'm going to bet on John Lynch. And he's going to have to learn some stuff as he goes, just like we all do. But you're going for the person. And John Lynch has succeeded in everything, and it excites me about him.
So you corner Kyle Shanahan, yeah, you get him on the podcast. Oh,
I mean, literally. I went to the Super Bowl and just spent the entire in the media sessions with Kyle, like right next to him.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, he couldn't get away from me.
He's really like, who is this guy?
49ers CEO Jed York admitted mistakes were made when the 49ers hired Jim Tomsula and Chip Kelly as head coaches after Jim Harbaugh. Both of those men lasted just 1 year apiece. In February of 2017, the 49ers hired the coach-GM combination of Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch to six-year contracts.
My approach is always be aggressive. I don't want to be a 9-7 team. You know, that's just not what I'm aiming to do. And if you make mistakes, make them quickly, learn from them, and move on. And I think we certainly made mistakes with our last two hires. And I think Kyle is going to be a great addition to this team and to this franchise and somebody that we can build around for the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. And that's really what I'd like to do. The more that you can stay stable and the more that you can have the same people that are running your organization, the better chance you have for long-term sustained success. And that's really what we're looking at, and I think we have the right people to really build this franchise from the football perspective.
As John Lynch was settling in as the 49ers' new general manager, he showed me around his office one day, and we stopped at a framed photo he has on his wall of him with Ronnie Lott. And John Lynch's NFL career was just beginning as Ronnie Lott's career, his Hall of Fame career, was ending, and he shared the significance of that photo.
That was cool. You know, that one's in particularly meaningful because I was at a stage in my career, I think year two, and Ronnie I had gotten to know when Bill Walsh was my coach up at Stanford, and he right and on that game he came to me and he said, "Hang in there. I'd just become a starter," and he said, "I watched some of your film, And from the end of last year, this was in preseason, from the end of last year, you're going to play at a high level in this league. You're going to be a star. And hearing that from Ronnie Lott gave me everything I needed to be excited. And so that's special to me for a number of reasons. First of all, it's Ronnie Lott, but the message he gave to me that day.
Last year, the 49ers had a little bit of a crisis on their hands with Joe Staley. He was the most veteran guy on the team. He was kind of having some struggles and didn't know how much longer he wanted to play football. And then he had a talk with Kyle Shanahan, and Kyle kind of laid it all out there and got Joe enthused about finishing the season. Here's Joe.
My mood was not good. I wasn't coming on the work with the same kind of enthusiasm that I usually come in with. And I actually sought out Kyle and was said, hey, we have to sit down and we have to have a conversation. I have to talk to you. I just got to get out of my own head right now. And we did, and he kind of really got my mind back on track. We had a good conversation. We talked for probably about an hour. It just got me refocused and all that. And I just really needed to talk to someone. I just didn't feel like I was kind of in a rut there professionally. Kind of coming to, at that moment was like, oh man, is this how my career is going to end with, my knee acting up and, I'm not playing well and, we haven't won a game yet this year. We have a new staff, new direction. This is going to be my last season. And, you kind of get weighed down on all that stuff. And it was beneficial for me. And I think that just kind of speaks to the kind of person he is too, to, be able to sit down with a guy that's, older and dealing with this stuff as a first-time head coach and be able to really sit down and, get me refocused.
Well, it kind of proved to be a good discussion because they are taking care of Joe Staley. He gets a veteran day off every Wednesday and a little rest for his body, probably some time with his family too.
Yeah, and you know what? This is – he's playing at a high level too. So when you look at where things have gone wrong – for the 2018 49ers, don't look at left tackle because Joe is playing at a very high level. And speaking of high, he can hit the high note. He can hit the low note.
Yeah, he can. I can't wait to hear this.
Joe took the nation by storm with his karaoke during podcast episode number 5. And this is what that sounded like. And then we're just going to go right into his rendition of The Lion King. So we go from Red Hot Chili Peppers
to
Lion King. These are over 2 different episodes.
All Around the World by Red Hot Chili Peppers. I think that's what it's called. All around the world, we can make time. Rumpin' and stumble because I'm in my prime. Born in the north and sworn to entertain ya. Because I'm down for the state of Pennsylvania. I try not to whine, but I must warn ya. But the mother... I don't want to swear. California, Alabama, baby said, hallelujah. Good guy, girl. I wish I knew ya. I know for sure that life is beautiful around the world. And I know it's you. You say hello and then I say I do.
Hakuna Matata. Ain't no passing craze.
It means no worries for the rest of your days.
It's a problem-free
philosophy. Hakuna Matata.
Hakuna Matata.
I'm very impressed. I like that he lays it all out there. He doesn't have a care in the world. He's just himself through and through.
Yes, and I pointed out on that podcast that this was a guy who was talking about retirement earlier in the podcast. And so it shows you, when he does something, he's going to go all in, whether it's football or whether it's karaoke.
Oh, yeah. And he definitely, on karaoke for sure.
Laura, are you familiar with KFC?
I know all about KFC.
Have you ever been to Marietta, Georgia?
I have been to Marietta, Georgia.
Do you know about the Big Chicken?
I don't know about the Big Chicken.
What? Are you serious?
Yes.
Ah, well, Jarek McKinnon is from
Marietta, Georgia.
Marietta, Georgia.
Home of the Big Chicken.
Home of the Big Chicken.
Home of the Big Chicken. The what? Big Chicken. Go look it up. You'll see it.
Okay. I'll look that up.
What is this?
That's the big chicken right there.
That so the big chicken
Kentucky
is
Fried
Kentucky
Chicken.
Fried Chicken.
KFC.
The it, Rolling Eye.
So it at KFC mm-hmm. it, on the building mm-hmm. is a gigantic chicken.
Literally chicken.
Yeah.
Red chicken.
A red chicken. My goodness, with the beak, the big yellow beak and the one eye. Wow. You ever eat there?
Yeah. But then, you know, when I start getting to the league and they start putting me on all this nutrition stuff, I obviously had to cut it out.
Uh-huh. When's the last time you ate the big chicken?
I can't even tell you. Maybe elementary.
It's yeah. Okay, so the big chicken is 56 feet tall. That is a big chicken.
That's a big chicken right there.
You know what's great about this?
What's that?
He's in the league, so he can't eat any more fried chicken. But we are.
Road trip to Marietta, Georgia. You know what? The biggest disappointment for me of the season, no Jerick McKinnon. He is great. I enjoyed that conversation.
Sit down with him. Yeah, I can't. I haven't gotten the chance to spend very much time with him. I did get to talk to his mom in the hallway when I was interviewing some players, and just a doll. She is lovely. So if that's any indication of who we got in Jerick McKinnon, I can't wait to get to know him.
Yeah, well, one guy who won't be here the rest of the season either is Jimmy Garoppolo. And we didn't do the peanut butter stuff, peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
That's the best part of the whole thing.
But what I thought was fun with him was that earlier I had been talking to Brent Jones, and Brent Jones had told me that he viewed Jimmy Garoppolo coming over from New England as a fully loaded computer. And I thought, oh, that's pretty good. And so then when I talked to Jimmy Garoppolo, I mentioned that. And then after I got his answer, I went back to Brent Jones. So this is a very convoluted, but this is how it went when I talked to Jimmy Garoppolo and then went back to Brent Jones.
I don't know if fully loaded computer is the right way to put it. You know, as a quarterback, there's so much more to learn. And so, I mean, hopefully I want to be doing this for a long time, and there's more to learn and more to fill up, I guess.
That's really cool.
Okay, so you heard Jimmy Garoppolo say that he's not necessarily a fully loaded computer, but he kind of is, right, Brent?
I stand by my analysis, and Jimmy is probably just being a little bit humble, but, you know, a fully loaded computer doesn't mean you don't have a software update every now and then.
We all need an old software update every now and again.
Absolutely. Words to live by. Another guy who's been a good addition to the 49ers is Richard Sherman. Man, it's still hard to believe after all those years as being the major antagonist in the 49ers-Seahawks rivalry that Richard Sherman is with the 49ers. But this is what he talked about when he came to the 49ers about his role on the field and off the field.
I think it's probably 50-50. You know, obviously I'm going to be asked to play at a high level, and that's what I expect from myself and I expect to bring to this team. But outside of that, I think I bring an aspect of culture and winning mentality. And I think a winning mindset every single day. And it's not just, oh, you know, we're going to wake up on Sunday and score more points than this team and, hey, that's a win. It's about waking up and doing things that will contribute to winning later. You know, whether it's your diet, your sleep habits, how you treat your teammates, how you converse, do you go out tonight or do you stay in and get some extra study, and what are you doing to help us win the game on Sunday? And I think just that mentality will help a lot of these people.
Richard Sherman coming into the 49ers now, trying to help the 49ers regain the storied history, the winning ways.
They've needed every bit of him on this roster, especially on the defensive side, just to be able to lead some of those younger guys. And with all the injuries they've been dealing with, he's extremely valuable.
There have been several episodes of the 49ers Insider Podcast where we've talked a lot about the defining moment of the organization. And that happened on January 10th, 1982, the catch. And obviously one of the guys I wanted to get on the podcast when we started was the player that many people believe is the greatest quarterback in NFL history. That's Joe Montana, and here he is talking about the catch.
We had really never thrown the ball to Dwight on that play at all, but it was crazy because Bill made us practice that part of it, the play, back in training camp, and we both thought he was crazy. because you know, it's very, very rarely did you ever not come open enough to at least give that first guy the ball to let him try to, you know, fall in the end zone. When I let it go, I thought it was arm's length above his head, so I didn't think it was any big deal. And then I heard I got knocked down, so I didn't see the catch, but I heard the crowd and figured, okay, it was complete. I didn't know what kind of catch it was until I got to the sideline. Chico Norton, our ex equipment manager, was on the field, which is he was never out there. But when I got over there, he said, "Boy, your buddy saved your ass that time." What are you talking about, Chico? He goes, "He jumped out of the stadium."
And the catch will forever live now outside of Levi's Stadium.
And you even use the arm gesture.
My arm. I actually was out of town the day that it was unveiled, so I haven't gotten the chance to go down there and see it. But it's from the pictures, it looks incredible the way that they did it. And just a really special thing for fans to be able to get their picture there. And then for that moment to be solidified in history.
Absolutely. And the one thing about that before we dive deeper into the catch is the Cowboys had a chance to win that game, and Eric Wright made a touchdown-saving tackle, and George Seifert, who would become the 49ers head coach years later and win two Super Bowls of his own, he was the 49ers defensive backs coach, and he saw his career start to fade away as Drew Pearson broke through the 49ers secondary. This is what George had to say about that.
Every time I'm around Eric Wright, I thank him, and I tell my grandkids whenever they're around him to thank him for what we have. It's because of his tackle. Dan White had thrown a pass to Drew Pearson, and he was going to split our secondary. This is after the catch, and Drew Pearson was going to score the winning touchdown after the catch. And somehow Eric Wright caught up to him and dove out and grabbed him by the back of the shoulder pads and threw him to the ground, which now would be an illegal play.
Do you ever wake up in a cold sweat at night, even all these years later, thinking about what would have happened had Drew Pearson wiggled free?
Well, I really don't have to think about it very much. I think I know what would have happened between Eddie and Bill. I mean, that would have been an easy decision. So, no, we thank Eric Wright, like I said, each time I visit with him.
It was an absolute pleasure to catch up with Dwight and see him a lot over the last few months of his life. In February, I went to his house right before he moved to Montana, and we talked about the catch and all the people who come up to him and if it ever gets old hearing from those people.
Would that ever get old to you?
Never.
Yeah, that was just a moment in time, man, that just keeps hanging on. And hopefully long after I'm gone, 49er fans will still enjoy that play and that year and that team that started it all off.
I love hearing from Dwight Clark and hearing firsthand his experience and his stories. You guys did a great job with the documentary, having the fans send those letters in, but it's extra special now hearing his voice and just how much he cherished the catch and what it meant to the history of the 49ers, and that he realized before he passed away that it would live on forever.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the documentary and the documentary Letters to 87 really all came about because of what Dwight Clark said that day on the podcast.
People jumping off sofas and breaking ankles and, you know, jumping up and hitting hands and ceiling fans. And I mean, it goes on and on. I've often thought that if I could get the word out somehow to get the stories, I should put a book together of the stories that these 49er fans lived through at that moment. Because after getting beaten by Dallas three times in a row in the early 70s, the stories just, the importance of it to these 49er fans just, you know, grew leaps and bounds.
Well, that turned out to be a great idea to get all the stories together.
Yes, it did.
throughout the first 99 episodes of the 49ers Insider podcast, you have had to dive in and talk about some pretty heavy subjects.
Yeah, and I really appreciate some of the people that I interviewed talking about some really tough stuff. Prague Marate lost his sister to anorexia. Marquise Goodwin, of course, last season, he and his wife lost a child during pregnancy, and he went out and played that same day and scored a touchdown. And Solomon Thomas's sister died from suicide earlier this year, and Solomon was very kind to share his story in hopes of bringing awareness to mental health issues. So, yeah, we did tackle some pretty difficult subjects. And with Dwight's diagnosis of ALS, we put together a piece on ALS and how three 49ers teammates who played together in the 1960s all were diagnosed with ALS in basically the same period of time, about 20 years after their careers ended. And those players were Gary Lewis, Matt Hazeltine, and Bob Waters. And here's a teammate of theirs, Ken Willard, talking about just the mystery of this rare disease and having three of his teammates diagnosed with the disease at roughly the same time.
Shortly after their deaths, there were many, many theories. There was a lot of conjecture about the fertilizer that they had used on the field in Redwood City that we practiced on. And there were just any number of things that people were bringing up, trying to figure out what the common denominator was. And so the demographics were so different, and yet all three of these guys wound up with ALS. And it just is one of the great mysteries of all time, I think, on how that occurred.
And of course, we lost a good one on June 4th when Dwight Clark passed away from ALS. Laura, I know you never got a chance to meet him. You know, he worked here for us, with us. I knew him as a general manager, knew of him as a player, of course. Oh, what a great guy. What just a always upbeat, always laughing, always with a smile on his face. And
you can tell how passionate people are about talking about him and what a great guy he was when I hear people talk about him. And that's what's been so cool to hear everybody's stories about Dwight Clark. He sounds like he was a true friend. His character really comes through when people talk about him, and you can tell when it's genuine and that they mean it, and that you get a sense of the person of who he was, even if you didn't get the chance to spend time with him or meet him in person.
And it's interesting because I never really thought of it in these terms. But when I saw him in February at his place, you know, it had dawned on me that I met my wife because of Dwight Clark. And I shared with him there was a preseason game in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I was up there for that. And a couple nights before this game, there was a reception, and I saw Dwight Clark at the one table, and I said, I want to sit next to Dwight. Meanwhile, there was a woman, Amy, who worked in the 49ers marketing department. She had a friend up there with her for that game, and the friend said, "Hey, look, there's Dwight Clark." And she says, "Would you like to sit at his table?" And so I was sitting next to my future wife.
I did not know that.
And it's all because, but it took me years and years
to piece it together.
It was always, the story was always, I was sitting next to my wife, or, you know, sitting next to Sarah at this event. And then only after DC was diagnosed and, you know, you start thinking about things and how people impact your life, it dawned on me that, well, the reason we were both there was because of Dwight Clark.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So
I wanted to share that story with Dwight. And just a little background. When I went to visit Dwight that day, he was not having a good day. I mean, he was struggling. And I told him, "We don't have to do this. You know, trust me, DC, if you're not feeling well, you know, you do whatever you need to do, you know, go back to bed or whatever. And he goes, no, I want to talk to you, but just let me catch my breath. The way he was that he would get energy. You know, people would pull energy out of him because he energized people around him, but also he would gain energy from talking and telling stories. Yeah. So when I told him that story that I just told you, here was his reaction.
Get out of here.
And we have two beautiful children. So Dwight Clark, you are responsible for
I'm a matchmaker.
You're a matchmaker.
I didn't even know it. Hey baby, I'm a matchmaker. Added to my resume.
Matchmaker.
Yeah, isn't that great? He was yelling to his wife, Kelly, in the other room. I'm a matchmaker. It was so fun. So there it is. I think that's how I will choose to always remember Dwight.
That's a lovely way to remember him.
The 100th episode.
Here we are. Yeah. I just come in on the tail end, yeah. And I get all the credit for doing 100 of these things. Just kidding. Yeah. No, you really put in a lot of work on these. And when you're trying to get to know a new team, like I was when I first moved here, you know, you can read a lot of stuff, but you really want to dig in and get to know a new team. I spent so much time listening back to these podcasts. And I know as a fan of the 49ers now and as covering the team, it's been invaluable to me to be able to listen to these interviews. So I know a lot of people out there probably feel the same way that I do, that it gives you a little bit behind the scenes and you get to hear people's personalities that you don't normally get to hear. Even in TV interviews, you know, it's a lot shorter and the questions are a little bit more formulated, and this is a little bit more laid back where you get to hear guys and really get a sense of who they are.
I love doing these interviews. The business has changed a lot. You don't really get to take the deep dive on guys and ask them questions and follow up on their answers. And so I've really enjoyed this. It's given me an opportunity to get to know some of these players at a deeper level. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I've thoroughly enjoyed since you've come on and we have our little banner back and forth.
We have our chats, our fireside chats.
We do have our fireside chats. And so, Laura, I mean, I will see you and we will talk, I'm sure, for episode 101, but we'll do this again for episode 200. Is that
right?
Yeah,
that's right. Here's to 100 more.
Yeah, so let's start logging that some of the great
That's going
to
save you time on the back end, Matt. Yes. It'll save you time on the back end.
Well, this has been the 49ers Insider Podcast. I'm Matt Maiocco.
I'm Laura Britt. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
You've been listening to the 49ers Insider Podcast. If you haven't already, please visit Apple Podcasts or Google Play to subscribe. And please give us a rating and a review. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at NBCS Authentic. We'll be back next week with another great edition of the 49ers Insider Podcast. Thank you for listening.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com.